This is Difference Makers with your host, Adam Van Brimmer. On today's episode, we mark the one-year anniversary of the podcast launch by discussing Difference Makers' origins, what was behind the idea of creating a long-form podcast with Savannah area community leaders, its success in offering insight into these individuals and what they do, and what we envision for the future. The first ever Difference Maker, Visit Savannah's Joe Marinelli, returns to guide the conversation. The Difference Makers podcast is brought to you by an organization making a major difference in our community, the Savannah Economic Development Authority. As discussed in the intro, we are breaking form with this Difference Makers edition. The subjects today are myself, Adam Van Brimmer, and Zach Dennis, the multimedia content editor here at the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. Together, Zach and I birthed this podcast on June the 5th, 2018, me on the content side and Zach on the production side. Difference Makers wasn't our first podcast, but it was the one we both thought would most resonate with the Savannah community, as well as establish our credibility in a new space beyond the written word. Throughout my career, leaders have always fascinated me, and by nature of what I do as a journalist, I've been fortunate enough to establish relationships and have in-depth discussions with many of Savannah's smartest and most interesting folks. Inviting the public to be flies on the wall for those types of conversations seemed like natural podcast content. The result is Difference Makers, presented by the Savannah Economic Development Authority, a podcast dedicated to highlighting Savannah's key players and their contributions to our community. Difference Makers hail from several sectors, including commerce, government, education, arts and culture, and philanthropy. A year in, we're pleased with the results and look forward to the future. It was suggested for our anniversary episode that we turn the tables and do a Difference Makers featuring Zach and I. We've taken to calling it the Anti-Difference Makers, and we hope it gives you insight into why we do what we do. So a year ago this week, we debuted this podcast, Difference Makers, and our first guest was Visit Savannah's Joe Marinelli, which was done very purposefully by me because, quite frankly, I didn't have much experience at all in terms of doing audio or podcasting or radio or however you want to classify exactly what we're doing here. And plus, Joe and I knew each other. We had a relationship. I knew that the conversation would be easy and hopefully engaging and let us kind of break into things pretty easily. But Joe's involvement with this podcast goes back even farther than that, even though he doesn't realize it. And that's because when I was approached about becoming the editorial page editor here in December of 2017, I reached out to some people in the community and said, hey, I've been gone for 4 years, and for those of you who don't know my background, I worked at this newspaper for about 15 years, and then I left and went to do some marketing at Gulfstream. And when I left, it was at the very beginning of really the tide turning in terms of print and internet journalism. It was a rough time. Quite frankly, there was a lot of speculation on whether we would survive, let alone thrive. And in the 4 years that I was gone, I personally felt and saw that they had turned that corner and that they were getting toward digital. And not only were we going to survive, we were going to thrive and reinvent ourselves and evolve ourselves. So I reached out to some folks and said, hey, you know, where do you feel the newspaper is now or the Savannah Morning News is now? Is it still relevant? What do you see as the future for the newspaper? And a lot of the feedback that I got was that, oh, yeah, people, the movers and the shakers, for lack of a better term, in town still look to the newspaper as the voice of this community. And it was still very, very well respected and that it still had a lot of potential and that it was just a matter of what can we do differently? What can we do better to kind of build on what we have and change things around? And I can't exactly remember exactly what Joe told me. I could probably go back and look at emails, but when you saw that note from me, Joe, and obviously this was well before we talked about doing anything like this, what were your thoughts of where this publication was in Savannah at that time, and what was the potential?
Well, that's quite a setup, right? Yeah. I want to go back to the part of I talked to Joe because it was easy and engaging. So at least we accomplished the easy part, right?
Right.
I'm not sure we engaged anybody, but it was easy. But no, I remember that conversation and kind of looking at the direction that we were going and still are going in my organization as it relates to marketing the destination to bring visitors here. It was about, as we talked about at lunch today, it was less about where we've been and more about where we're going, right? Mm-hmm. Less about how we've made decisions based on our experiences for the last 20 years and more about young people like Zach that are going to pave the way and teach us the new ways of communication and marketing and, you know, doing that digitally and doing that through social media and so forth. And you're right. We did talk about, you know, that I felt at the time and still feel today that that people in this community still care a lot about what's on the front page of the newspaper every day and a few other pages. But with what you've done with Difference Makers and the podcast and so forth, I think you've taken those first steps naturally that. You know, are the acorns for the future.
From there, got in here, and I'm going to bring Zach in now, because when I came in, podcasts were what I saw as a piece of the puzzle. Joe, you and I talked a little bit earlier about where does it fit in terms of strategy. And for me, when I was looking at it, you know, I mean, there's the low-hanging fruit, which is to come in and start a Twitter handle or something else and wisecrack on the local news and try to engage that way. And a lot of people do it. We do it. Yeah. But for me, it was more a matter of what can we do that maybe is a little bit outside the box. And that, you know, podcasts aren't outside the box. A lot of people, a lot of publications have podcasts. Right. But it was something different for this market. It was something niche in this market. And Zach, you had experience doing some podcasts. And when the parent company came in and said, let's turn this room that we're sitting in right now into a podcast studio and let you have at it. What did you see as the potential for what we could do on the podcast front?
It was definitely sticking you into a room to talk for 45 minutes on end on every other week. No, I think that, it, like you said before, that the news industry was in this shift, and I guess I have either the luck or the, you know, unluckiness to not have ever had any work in the previous state. And so I've always been in that fluxy, we are probably going to die soon, we need to figure out what's going on. I've just been living in that. So it's nothing new to me. And so I guess that's why being able to transition to these different formats is pretty second nature, because I'm like, if we can find something new, something different that we can engage the public in and inform the public with, that's the best case scenario. And so that's kind of when I went into developing the podcast, was with like this one, we need to have the community, these leaders' voices on record, you know, talking about how they're affecting the community, what needs to be done in the community, and how what people need to know about what the work that they're doing. And so I think that informing the public and giving them a different way of interacting with the news, you know, not everybody wants to sit there and just read the newspaper. This might be easier. Somebody's on their treadmill right now, you know, like working out or working in the yard or doing something like that. But they're still getting that information. And so I think that getting the information is the most important thing. It's not necessarily the delivery system. And I think that's something that Mike and Susan, you know, with the newspaper would agree with, that it's not about the delivery system, it's about the information that's being delivered. And so that's kind of what I went with.
That kind of speaks to what we were talking about at lunch in terms of generational shift, right? And understanding what a podcast is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we joke about it internally at Visit Savannah, and our VP of marketing, Jeremy Harvey's a very big podcast groupie, and I had no experience with it, and we often battled about the relevance of a podcast, and then ironically, I ended up being your first. But I guess Zach and Adam, I'd kind of flip the tables a little bit and say, okay, so a year later, do you think you've accomplished what you both just talked about in terms of, you know, starting to blaze a new trail? And then as a marketing guy, I guess I would ask the question, and how do you measure that? How do you know if somebody's listening while they're working out or working in the yard or whatever? How, and that goes back to what my initial reservation observations were, is, you know, how do you build relevance? How do you market something like this? And then how do you know whether anybody's paying any attention to it or not? So in your case, turning the tables a little bit, how do you know?
Well, it's all about audience, right? I mean, that's really what we're all here for. We can sit here and say journalism, the fourth estate, has been around for a long, long time, and we have a certain responsibility to the public. But the bottom line is we are a business, and to have a business, you've got to have some audience. So what are you trying to accomplish in anything you do to build the audience? So whether it's writing an editorial, which is an opinion piece without a name on it, or running letters to the editor, or doing a podcast. And for me, when I started looking at podcasts, I liked it because it touched a lot of areas in terms of audience. One, newspapers. Our readers tend to be an older demographic. So how are we going to connect with younger readers and younger professionals in town? Well, the national stats will tell you that a lot of people under the age of 40 and certainly under the age of 35 listen to podcasts several times a day. I think Zach probably has a little bit more definitive information on where that comes from.
I've listened to like three so far today. It's 1:40 in the afternoon.
Yeah, so it's a way that the younger generation is connecting with news or entertainment or what have you. The other thing is it allows you to give to touch on the news of the day in a different way. So maybe you give them a conversation in a podcast with Joe Marinelli about the latest tourism trends or what have you, and that is then going to direct them to log on to the website and read a little bit more about that or search it out. Or I saw podcasts as a way into a new audience, and hopefully your old audience will consume it as well. Mm-hmm. And then the other piece of that, the marketing piece of that, is the whole brand halo effect. Mm-hmm. If you can give quality content, and no matter what format it is, then it certainly can shape the way people think about other pieces of your product. In terms of how we measure, I'm gonna let Zach talk about that. That is kind of the beauty of the internet, is everything you can, for better or for worse sometimes, can be put on a metric.
Yeah, and the podcasting metric is very, to an extent, very vague at this point. It's not like something where with like print subscribers where you can be like 30,000 people are getting the paper or something like that. Like it's much more vague because you have downloads and you have people who are actually listening. They may just download it and not listen. We don't know. And so you kind of have this. It's this.
Joe's got a phone full.
He's just got a lot
to podcasts.
That's
not
fine.
Ours, but
if you can just download our podcast, you don't have to listen necessarily. Yeah. We just need that download.
we can talk about that too.
Yeah, but I think that kind of going back to the original question of is it working? I would say it's just beginning to. I think that we're getting to that point now, and maybe Adam can speak a little bit more to this, where we will have some subject and somebody will go, hey, I listened to you talking to so-and-so on the commute the last week. Mm-hmm. I think that's the kind of starting gate that you have to get to. And it's like any other. It was the same with newspapers, many, 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 many years ago. You have to kind of establish the method of engaging with it in order to get to that point. Facebook didn't start out like it is today. You had to kind of build that muscle with people. And so I feel like podcasts, especially in the Savannah area, need to be kind of built up. And we have done a good job of establishing them kind of on the ground level. So it's fun and not fun, because it's fun because we are establishing this medium in the area. But at the same time, we're also having to go through all the hardships of, I can't count how many people we've had to physically take their phone and go, all right, let me sign up for this podcast for you. They listen to it afterwards. They're happy with it, but it's like, they don't really know. It's just kind of a gap. And so when it comes to metrics, for me, if we are getting useful, productive information out there, I'm good with it. I'm not as concerned with the downloads or, the marketability of it. If we are establishing researched, interesting information that is important to people, I'm good with that. And so on that end, we've been fantastic so far. I've been very happy with the results of that. I think that a lot of the episodes on this podcast stream will show that.
I mean, in a couple of years, when we have big numbers, we're going to be saying, look at our numbers. Yeah, the other stuff.
Then I'll brag about that. Yeah.
We'll brag about that. But no, we came to this. I came to this. I can't speak for Zach. I doubt that he did. But I came to this with a lot of trepidation because I spent 20 years writing. I'm not used to being in front of a microphone. I think prior to started doing podcasts, I hosted the Seth Hart sports talk show here in town maybe four or five times, and a couple of times it was an abject disaster. So I had a lot of trepidation. I'm one of those people that can't stand the sound of my own voice. You know, I've gotten to the point now where I can listen to the my own podcast, but it still kind of makes me cringe a little bit. And you know, we kind of knew what we wanted to get out there, but it's had to evolve. And Difference Makers is fortunate that it really has. I think we knew much more than the other podcasts, The Commute. We knew with Difference Makers what we wanted to do. We wanted to bring in community leaders who make a difference in our community, talk about who they are, talk about what is important with them and organization at that time, and then talk about philosophically how you do what you do and what people might find interesting. So
that's kind of a carryover. I mean, we've been having that happen for many years. You could look at Difference Makers as kind of an extension of something like a 60 Minutes interview where you're sitting down and literally just kind of working through something. And I think it's good in an age where a lot of people have free rein to establish what their identity is just through social media and stuff like that. I think that having a sit-down conversation where it's, you know, it's not necessarily face-to-face, but I think that there is an element when you have the headphones in and you're listening to Adam speak with somebody, it feels like you're hanging out in the room with him. So when he's sitting down talking with the Coles, it feels like you're hanging out with Adam and Jesse and Emily Cole and having a conversation with them. It kind of adds that in-home quality that you may not be able to get in other places.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what's hooked me. You know, when you talk about the two different products, Difference Makers, you know, having the opportunity to listen to a Mark Dana talk about the 200 Club, the virtues of the 200 Club, or Paula Chrysler coming in and doing all the great things that Paula does. And I think I said to Adam earlier, my favorite was the interview with Rob Hernandez from the city of Savannah. I mean, he just, you know, he had me eating out of the palm of his hand in that interview because he was so engaged and so genuine in that conversation.
You don't hear from him, you know, or you didn't hear from him very often, you know, in terms of he wasn't breaking that down necessarily for you.
Yeah, for sure. And yet that was my favorite one. On the flip side, with The Commute, listening to how that's evolved, the one thing I would say is it's always topical. It's always, you know, whatever I read in this morning's paper, I'm probably going to listen to a little more about on the way home, or whatever I'm listening to on the way home, I'm probably going to read about in tomorrow's paper. And that's, you know, my commute home every night is about 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so it's perfect because the commute fills that void for me. And, you know, there have been times during the election cycle where, you know, it was fascinating insight into, you know, some of what could be. And there have been other times where it was like, yeah, this, I don't have much interest in this one. So
should sit behind the booth and have to do that part.
Yeah, I'm sure. But I think, you know, doing the deep dive with Difference Makers has accomplished that goal. And I said to Adam earlier today that's been fascinating to me is just being in loose conversation and somebody saying, oh, I heard Mark Dana talking about the 200 Club on Difference Makers the other day, and he said blah blah blah, and so I know that that's connecting with the community, you know, and so I think that's a good track. But you know, with the commute, it's like we talked about earlier, you know, have you accomplished what you set out to do in the first year? Probably so. You've planted a lot of acorns, and now you know you've got to see what grows from there.
It's interesting because I think when you listen to a longer interview with somebody, even if you're getting a lot of the same information that you're getting from a news story, it resonates a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because
the conversation that Zach was talking about.
If it's in the other person's voice or what have you. And I've always felt that I'm a pretty good interviewer, but I'm not necessarily an eloquent interviewer. I think I tend to stumble around a little bit.
I would agree with that. You are a good interviewer, but yeah, you've had your moments.
Yeah, and to do it in this setting, is it's a little bit different. You've got to be a little bit more refined, and you've got to get to the point a little bit more. And as every journalist should do, you have to ask more open-ended questions and not ask a closed-ended question and hope that somebody will fill in the blanks for you. Mm-hmm. But as somebody who, and I think Joe and I, and I'm sure Zach as well, grew up listening to the radio an awful lot. What is it that podcasts do that radio didn't? Is to the two of you, is podcasts an extension of radio? Is it different than radio? Is it better than radio? Is it worse than radio? We obviously like the fact that it's taped and not live, but where do you guys come down on
that? I think that it's a little bit more refined than radio. So, like, we're not going to be sitting here for 3 hours like Howard Stern and just kind of rattling off stuff. And he's great at that because he's been doing it for so many years. But I think being able to refine it into a 45-minute block that, again, you can listen to whenever, that's just kind of an addendum. That's been something that's worked really well with Difference Makers, is that some story has come up, whether it's Rob Hernandez or it's something with the film office or it's, you know, and we're able to tag those episodes on there. So they may forget that we talked to Rob Hernandez or Beth Nelson a long time ago, but then when the news comes back up, we're able to bring that back in. So that's something that's also nice. But I think it is one of those things where if you're able to kind of have more control over it, I think that radio, it's the same with like TV and the fight with streaming, having a little bit more control of when you can interact and engage with the product, for lack of a better word. I think people like to have more control, and they've been establishing more control, at least in my mind.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I mean, radio is so complex these days, right? Because you have podcasts, and you have playlists, and you have satellite. And so you can dial into whatever you want whenever you want it. And I think that's where your podcast kind of fit in with my world is, I'm a big Howard Stern fan, so I'm going to listen to that when I'm in the mood. Mm-hmm. But on the weekends, I want to listen to the Beatles channel. I want to find out who was on Difference Makers and see if that's something, you know, while I'm running my errands on a Saturday, and that fills in and so forth. So, I think radio, comparing it to when we were growing up, when it was all about listening to a ball game or rock and roll, today, you know, it's like anything else. The competition for that amount of radio time in the car or whatever is very different, and there's lots of choices, and so you know, everybody's going to kind of customize their radio experience to what they're in the mood for at the moment, and I think podcasts fill in there.
Howard Stern has certain feelings about podcasts, right? You were kind of sharing some of those.
Yeah, well, we were talking earlier. He's generally not a big fan of it. And the reason that I can relate to what he talks about is marketing. And we talked about that earlier as well, is, you know, his question is, how do you market a podcast? How do you build audience? He's been in radio for, you know, 30 plus years and started at the bottom and has built an audience, you know, to whatever is tens of millions of listeners that he has. And so being in the marketing business, marketing the destination to bring visitors here, you know, those are some of the questions I have. How do you market a podcast so you get more people engaged? And Zach, a few minutes ago, you said, look, I'm really more about the quality of the content than the number of downloads or whatever. And you know, and I get that. But as a marketing guy, and as you said, Adam, earlier, you know, it's still a business and it's about engagement and being able to sell that product. How do you market it to an audience? And frankly, you know, I don't see the newspaper really marketing the commute or Difference Makers in the marketplace. So whatever you've accomplished in the first year, my hat's off to you. I wonder how much more successful you can be if there were subtle or gentle reminders that this product is out there.
Yeah, that's a real challenge, because we did slow play a little bit because we were trying to find our way. But now that we have found our way, we are confident in the quality of the content. How are we going to push it and grow the audience? And, you know, from an internal standpoint, our Saturday editorial hole now every Saturday is dedicated to a transcript of something, usually from the podcast. So that is a way to reach at least the people that consume mm-hmm. the print product, and to a certain extent the digital product, to maybe tie them back and entice them to go and listen to the podcast. How do we build new audience out of that? Yeah, it's going to require some external marketing. Mm-hmm. And I'm hopeful that as the grassroots word of mouth marketing has kind of taken off and is kind of steady now, we need to start telling our own message. Mm-hmm. And I'm confident that we're going to do quite a bit of that in the years to come. And we've had to win some people over. You know, we heard a lot in starting this. We wanted to get some advertisers, and every question was, well, what is, like what, like you were asking, how many people are listening? What is your audience? Well, we're starting up. We're asking you to take a little bit of a leap of faith, and we were fortunate in the fact that we were able to tie it into kind of a bit of a marketing or a business strategy for the advertisers, for Difference Makers with CETA, Savannah Economic Development Authority. It was, you know, when CETA is reaching out to people out of market to try to entice them to come here, isn't this another touch point that you could use to say, hey, you know, whatever business you're in, let's say you're scouting an aerospace company. Well, then this is the touch point for you. Send them an email. Hey, haven't checked in for you a while. Did you see this thing with Gulfstream Aerospace, Jay Neely? Give mm-hmm. it a listen. Mm-hmm. And that was a lesson that I learned, since we were mentioning Gulfstream, at Gulfstream. Is one of my roles when I was at Gulfstream was to do a twice a year customer magazine. And yes, the customer magazine had advertising in it, so it was bringing in revenue. But the main point was it gave the sales team an excuse to reach out to a prospective customer and say, hey, Joe Marinelli, haven't talked to you in a while. Did you see our latest issue of Nonstop Magazine? Here it is. Mm-hmm. So you're creating touch points for your advertisers. And you kind of have to take a complex, comprehensive, holistic view of it. But the bottom line is yes, we can do quality content all day long, but if not enough people are seeing it, what is the point? What mm-hmm. is the purpose? And I'm thinking that we're poised to make that big jump here in year two.
It's like we were talking about before. You kind of have to explain what it is, and I don't think a lot of people have a sense of what it is. I think on a much larger scale, you know, Mark Maron can talk about Casper mattresses on his podcast, and that's going to, because every week you're going to hear Casper mattresses, and the hope is that after a while they will come there to buy. If you're like, oh, I need a mattress, oh, I keep hearing about this Casper,
and here's a promo code for it.
And here's a promo code for it to kind of gauge that. But again, yeah, it's one of those things also, though, that it's this free resource. Maybe I'm too idealistic. I'm 27. I think I'm allowed to be for a while longer. But
three more years.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm like, I got a couple more years. But it's one of those things, again, like you said, the leap of faith. I'm kind of like, this is the thing that we're doing. It's starting to gradually grow. It's not like a rapid growth, but it's something that clearly has value. And so you got to kind of take a leap with if. Do you feel like this value is worth it for you? And to me, I'm kind of just like, you should take the leap on that. But again, I'm not the one with a lot of money who's buying mm-hmm. the ads for that.
We'll get back to the inside baseball discussion on Difference Makers right after we talk about the Savannah Economic Development Authority. When it comes to Difference Makers in our area, the team at CETA is pushing to make Savannah a great place to work and live. CETA is committed to creating, growing, and attracting jobs and investment in the Savannah region. Whether you're a business looking to relocate to the Savannah region or an existing business ready to grow and expand, CETA is a centrifuge of a propeller, making the connections, helping propel the business to success. Learn more about the Savannah Economic Development Authority and what they do in the Savannah community by visiting CETA.org. And it's brand awareness, right? You guys deal with this at Visit Savannah. You have an established product, a product that, and take this in a way that it's intended, a product that sells itself. Hmm. But how can I at Visit Savannah make sure enough eyes get to see
yeah.
that product for what it is?
Sure. And, you know, People like to tell us how easy our job is,
of
right?
Of course, yes.
And listen, this is a beautiful destination that in many ways does sell itself. But along with that, just like the business that you're in, the expectations are very high. There's a lot of hotel rooms to fill. There's a lot of restaurant seats to fill. The retailers are growing and expanding. And so you have to be inventive. You have to be innovative. You have to be creative. You have to be willing to try new things and experiment and know that not everything's going to work. Lord knows, I look back on my 12 years here and we've had some stinkers over the years as well, but we've tried things and we've never been afraid to try those things. I think those, and tying it back to Zach's point a few minutes ago, those are the growing pains. Those are the growing pains that any business goes through to build relevancy. And so you're seeing that. I think about a conversation I had with a group of Broughton Street merchants one time, and they were trying to figure out, this was back in 2009 and 10 when we were all struggling a little bit, and they were trying to figure out how to get more customers. And I asked the question, who is your customer? Mm-hmm. And one of the fellas said, well, that's a dumb question. Everybody's our customer. Mm-hmm. And you know what? No. Not everybody's your customer. Not everybody's Savannah's customer. Not everybody is your customer. So you've got to work with the team internally here to figure out who is that target audience that you hope to hit. And then if you can bring along some of the folks on the fringes as well, all the better. But those are the growing pains that any business goes through, and it cycles all the way back to the beginning of this conversation when we talked about, it's really about where we're going for the next 20 years and not at all about where we've been for the last 20. And sometimes in this town, that's a hard concept to sell. Yes. Frankly, but I think with where you see this city going, more and more people are buying into that philosophy.
Yeah, and it's interesting because when we started this, that was when I reached out to people and said, "Hey, you want to come in and do the podcast?" And they were kind of like, "Well, what in the world is that?"
Yeah.
And having to sell people and explain to people what it is. Do you see? And obviously, there's some other products in town that do similar things. Mm-hmm. I think Savannah CEO does some videos, does yep. some video conversations and some interviews. I don't think they're nearly as long or nearly as probably as wide ranging as what we do. But you start to see more and more podcasts come around and do these kind of things. I know Dan Levitard has a new podcast, South Beach Sessions, that does a really good job, and it's just conversations. And I'm just kind of wondering, from your perspective, where do we go from here? How valuable are these conversations? Do you think that they are furthering the discussion of what's going on in this community?
Yeah, I'd like to use myself as sort of the bellwether, right? So I operate in two very different worlds, my business life and my personal life, like everybody else. And I'm always fascinated because I'm fortunate enough to be at the table for a lot of the conversations that happen about where this community is going. And I hear about homelessness, and I hear about workforce development, I hear about crime, and I hear about cleanliness, and I hear about tourism and the success at the ports and Gulfstream and so forth. So I get to be a part of those conversations during the week, right? But then in the evenings on the weekend, I have my circle of friends that that are just everyday people, and I get to listen to what they're talking about.
What's important to them.
Right. And how the two overlay, and sometimes I can smile and say, think to myself, well, I hear what he's saying, but that's not at all how it goes, and so forth. In a real life world, people in this town, this is still a small town. It's a small city, and everybody wants to be in the know. And right now, I think the Savannah Morning News is still, the leader of that parade in terms of being in the know. And with all with all due respect to our friends in the television and radio business, I think the morning paper is still that, right? So So over the next 3 years, I think, you know, the challenge to you all is, you know, how are you translating that leadership role in the community in a different way? Right. And you know, so you look at best practices of what's happening around the country and who's doing it well or who's not doing it so well, and do what I think the Beacon is doing, your new product, yeah. You know, and using that as an opportunity to stay in touch with the voices that are leading this community right now. And because I think whether it's the business sense or the personal side, everybody's interested in the same things. And so how do you continue to serve in a leadership role in that way?
Let's wrap up this episode by talking about, not so much about this podcast, but other podcasts. I know, Joe, this is probably your favorite.
Number one.
Your favorite podcast.
Top of the charts.
It may be one of the only ones.
It's probably the only one that you listen to.
Yeah. But podcasts in general, and we've had Roz on here before and talked about where they're going, and I mentioned Dan Le Batard earlier. Of course, that podcast grew out of his radio show that is presented as a podcast, and a lot of radio shows are presenting themselves at podcasts. Mm-hmm. You've also got Serial podcasts now.
Well, Fresh Air on NPR plays as a radio show and a podcast.
Yeah. Right. So you've got a lot of different things in the space, and I'm going to really pull on your expertise here, Zach, because I know you stay on top of a lot of the literature surrounding it. Where are podcasts headed? What's the sky the limit? Is it an evolutionary process? Is it where it is and it's going to go along this way for a while? What's your take on that?
I think it's difficult to map out. I think it's so open. It's relatively open-ended to this point. I don't think anybody's found a specific, I guess, formula in order to kind of do stuff with it. For people who are interested in podcasts, I'd really recommend, even if you don't listen to them regularly, is Mark Maron's 1000th episode, where he and his producer sit down, kind of similar to this, for almost 2 hours and talk about what, because he's probably one of the most formative podcasts in terms of creating the medium. And they talk about the ebbs and flows of that. And it was really interesting because even after 1,000 episodes and after talking to people all of the Rolling Stones, President Obama, all of these giant guests, they still don't really necessarily have an in-game idea of where they're headed. And so I think that really in the end, kind of like I was talking about before, one, it creates this recorded archive that almost works like a public oral history of moments in time and in the news of the day. But I also think that it becomes this kind of bridge between the more traditional and the more digitally technologically focused narrative form of just telling stories of storytelling. Mm-hmm. And so I think that even from a Dan Le Batard episode where he's talking more specifically about sports to Serial or Welcome to Night Vale, which is much more narratively driven, stuff like that, I think that it has so many different forms. And that's kind of what's interesting about it, is that it's very formless at this point, and so you can kind of go wherever with it. And I think that's kind of neat.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I'm kind of looking through my list of regular listens, and you have a podcast that was a radio show, the Tony Kornheiser Show. It's still essentially a radio show. Bill Simmons, where he just basically gets on there and vamps and does have guests.
Yeah,
you've got a Michael Lewis podcast that are very produced.
And I would recommend those. That's been my favorite podcast I've listened to in the last few months.
And but again, it's like James Andrew Miller, another really good podcast that's very produced, or 30 for 30 does podcasts. They're very produced. They're not this. Political Rewind, which comes out of GPB, it's a radio show. It is a roundtable format.
Revisionist History, Malcolm Gladwell's podcast.
Yeah. Freakonomics Radio. I mean, the stuff that it just, I think that is, to me, the point of this rambling statement that I'm giving is that I think podcasts can be anything that you want them to be. You know, if you want it to be a serial, a book on tape, it can be. If you want it to be a radio show, it can be. If you want it to be a long conversation, it can be. And I think that maybe is why podcasts have really taken off as radio has kind of bumped along where it is. And I'm pretty excited about where podcasts are going and ultimately where we're going to go in terms of our digital podcast offerings.
And I'll give an example from where I started is because this podcast I do regularly, Cinematary, we've been doing that for like 5 or 6 years. And it started as just friends in college hanging around talking about what movies they saw. And it's evolved and become much more nuanced than that. I mean, we do have series, and you know, we curate stuff. We have guests. We have, you know, professors who come on and we'll discuss topics. But at the heart of it, it's just we're sitting around talking about what movies we saw this week, and it keeps that kind of collegial spirit to it, while also having much more, you know, a much more rigid format. I mean, we follow the same kind of mold each time. But I think that. That's why people are coming back to it. They're not coming back to it because we have this rich cinematic knowledge. They're not coming back to it because we're doing something that's vastly different than anybody else. There's a lot of other podcasts about movies that people are just sitting there rambling about. But I think that it's about the personality. It's about the conversation. And it's as how you would interact with any other type of story, whether it's a movie or it's a play or it's music. It's revisiting the players that you're used to seeing, you're revisiting Zach and the other people that you're used to hearing, and kind of getting an update or spending more time with them. I think that it kind of has that more personal quality than any other form. I mean, I guess the closest example is kind of the early days of television with I Love Lucy and the Andy Griffith Show, where you're sitting there and you're kind of experiencing these characters that you've kind of had a personal relationship with because you're just sitting there with the television screen. And I think that podcasting is similar to that, where you have this personal connection to it. And I think that that's what allows it to expand more and more, is you just find other ways to not really, I was going to say exploit that because that sounds terrible, but more but more to take that and nourish it and find other ways to you know, spend time. You can spend time with people and talk politics or sports or, you know, again, that's where it becomes formless. You're just telling stories, you know. And I think that's where the formlessness goes. It has so much potential, but it always comes back to having that kind of in-home, you're sitting down with your buddies or your family and having a discussion quality to it. And I think that's what, at its core, it's most effective with.
Well, you know, you talked about personal experience, right? Mm-hmm. And in today's terminology, a different way to say that is UX, user experience, mm-hmm. right? That's, mm-hmm. you know, people are all about the user experience. And I think a terrific example of that is the popularity of Instagram and where Instagram is today versus Twitter, right? You know, in terms of how we market the destination, people want to be engaged with our Instagram page because the user experience, the visitor to our city is posting pictures of this beautiful city, and people want to be there. People want to feel like that's part of their personal experience. And I think that's a lot of what you're talking about as well. So you can see it happening all around us. Sometimes you don't know that it's happening all around us, but I think the growth and popularity of podcasts, things like Instagram, it's all happening kind of right in front of us. It's just hard to pinpoint sometimes.
Well, I'm thankful that we have a niche, and that's local news and local community leaders and difference makers. And Joe, it's funny, I was listening to part of our initial one in prepping for this, and one of my if you ask me what was the one thing I remembered going into that from that interview,
you stayed awake,
I listened to it again, was Joe talking about working at a Donald Trump property, a property that was owned by Donald Trump back then, and it stuck with me. And as I listened to it today, I kind of chuckled. And at that point, I had everything I needed to know about Joe Marinelli, so I turned it off. And
That's funny. So, have we been easy and engaging again this time, or
you'll have to wait for that? Hey, Joe, heard you on the podcast.
Yeah, right.
Well, Joe, thank you for indulging us and volunteering, quite frankly, or even you might not want me to say this, suggesting that we do this, and it's been fun, and certainly it gives us a rare opportunity to reflect back on what we're doing and why we're doing it, and I'm hoping that the listeners out there enjoyed it, and I don't think Zach and I will ever think of ourselves necessarily as difference makers, but it was good to to be the star of your own show every once in a while. Thanks for indulging us.
Yeah, well, thanks for the opportunity to come back. I enjoy the conversation, and hopefully we talked about some things today that the listeners are interested in, right? And maybe asked some questions or brought some things up that they've wondered about as well. So let's do it again in 5 years and see where we're at then, right? Zach, by then...
Lord willing.
Yeah,
I'll be much more pessimistic.
Yeah,
that's right. I'll work on that.
Thanks, guys.
Let me thank Visit Savannah's Joe Marinelli for putting the screws to us on today's Difference Makers, as well as our presenting sponsor, the Savannah Economic Development Authority, a difference-making group in our community. Listen to new and archived episodes of Difference Makers wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, and Spotify. Recent guests include Healthy Savannah's Paula Chrysler and James Beard award-winning chef Mashama Bailey. Difference Makers is a production of the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. Thank you for listening.